Most people know the story of Adam and Eve, even if they never went to church or read the Bible. The story of these two primordial humans has permeated many facets of our culture. In name or story, they're all over literature and movies and music. And today's first reading is why. Just think about it for a second. Two people, a command, a forbidden fruit, disobedience, shame. Ooh la la. It has all of the major components of the most salacious books or television. And if you add on to that the heaps of sexual innuendo that theologians and commentators have piled onto this text, and it's no wonder that this story has captured imaginations. But it's done more than that. In the hands of the Western church, this story has been used to substantiate everything from strict gender roles with dominating men and submissive women to making sex something scandalous. And has created this belief in an innate, sinful nature of humanity from our very conception. Or, if we want to quote Martin Luther, humans are nothing but dunghills. But don't worry, he adds on to that with this last bit. With God's grace, we are covered in snow. Dunghills covered in snow. We look better, but we are dung all the same. Not actually sure that makes me feel better. So what is this story actually about then? Well, I'm glad you all asked. So let's take a look. The first thing I want you to know is that immediately preceding where our reading for today begins, the last sentence in Genesis 2 is, Adam and Eve were both naked, and they felt no shame. Naked, but no shame. Hold on to that idea for a moment. And then here's how the events of the story unfold. God tells Adam, eat your fill from all the garden's trees, but don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because on the day you eat from it, you will die. It's not entirely true. They won't die on that day. They didn't die on that day. But maybe God is just telling just a little white lie to help kind of drive the point home. And before we move on, I do need to say one other thing. The lectionary, which gives us our readings for each week, doesn't always give us the full section of the text. Sometimes it skips over parts. Today, it skipped over half a chapter. And in that half chapter, Eve is created. So at this point, Eve hasn't even been created yet. But before the next portion starts, she is. It's just been skipped over. That's going to be important in a second. Next comes a snake, or it's also called a serpent. Now let me be clear here. This is not the devil. The text never says that it's the devil or the Satan. That was assigned by people much, much later. It's just a snake. It's a talking and clever snake, but it's still a snake nonetheless. And so this snake sidles up to Eve and asks, did God really say that you shouldn't eat from any tree in the garden? This is an exaggeration on the snake's part. To which Eve replies, we may eat the fruit of the garden's trees, but not the fruit in the middle of the garden. God said, don't eat from it, and don't touch it. God never mentions touching it. But we have to remember, Eve was just created, so she never heard the command directly from God. Maybe Adam added that in. We don't know. Or you will die. Pish tosh, the snake retorts. You won't die. God knows that on the day you eat from it, you will see clearly, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Now here, the snake isn't lying. They don't die, and they do receive some knowledge. So if we're going to be really honest on the truth scale, the snake is one, God is zero. Although I would like to point out that the fact that Eve didn't just immediately go eating the fruit shows that she already had a sense of right and wrong. She knows that obedience is right and disobedience is wrong. Or perhaps maybe it's just the threat of death that deters her. Now, the Talmud, the Jewish commentary on the scriptures, says that the snake pushes Eve into the tree. And when she touches the tree and sees that nothing bad happened, she decides that she can proceed and she can eat. Honestly, my brain can't fathom the physics of a snake pushing a human, but I don't know. Maybe it was an anaconda. But regardless, the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight for the eyes and that the tree was desired to make one wise. So she took the fruit and she ate. And she gave some to her husband, who was with her, and he ate. Again, let's stop for a moment, though. Adam was with her? Apparently, Adam had just been standing there silently this entire time. He's just kind of lurking there, or, I don't know, standing, staring blankly just next to Eve. He hasn't spoken up once, either to Eve or to the snake. He doesn't advocate for any position, pro or con, regarding eating the fruit. He's just pretty inert right there. But they eat the fruit, and then bam, the effect of that fruit kicks in. The eyes of both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made loincloths for themselves. We've come full circle. We're back to being naked again. Only this time, they're ashamed. Pre-fruit, naked and loving it. Post-fruit, naked and mortified. From there, they're banished from the garden. No one is cursed, though, except for the serpent and the earth. There are punishments, though, for the man and the woman. Life is painful. And work is hard. Entirely absent, though, is a curse. No passing on of original sin through generations. No abandonment from God. No human dunghills, Luther. Even as God expels them out of the garden, God is with them. So despite centuries trying to paint them in reverse, Eve is astute. She is thinking. And if anything, Adam is kind of childish. Feminist theologian and biblical scholar Phyllis Tribble says of Eve, we could read this woman as a theologian, an ethicist, a hermeneut, a rabbi who speaks with clarity and authority, and who eats because she finds the tree physically appealing, aesthetically pleasing, and above all, intellectually transforming. Adam, on the other hand, is childlike. His tummy was hungry, so he ate. And he didn't want to be in trouble either. So what does he do? He blames God for creating Eve. Without her, he reasons quite poorly, none of this would have happened, so it's all God's fault, actually. And what bothers me the most here is that Adam and Eve don't even really learn the difference between good and evil. The name of the tree was another lie. What they learned was shame. They ate and became ashamed of their bodies. We don't know what they thought was shameful. It doesn't tell us, except they were there. And they wanted their bits covered. If you remember earlier in Genesis, when God is making literally everything, God declares each and everything good. Adam and Eve were part of that. Adam good, Eve good, nudity good, and absolutely everything else good. But they ate the fruit. And suddenly, it wasn't good anymore. Whatever knowledge that they received convinced them that what God had created and loved wasn't good, that it was shameful, that it should be covered up and ignored. They saw their bodies, how they live and move and have their being, as no longer noble. And instead of relishing any curves or lines or unique marks as beautiful, they hid. Throughout the whole series of events, Adam and Eve were given mistaken ideas in the guise of knowledge. And tragically, that's how they walk away from the whole scene. I think we all carry around white lies, half-truths, mistaken notions about things. Some of the biggest I carry are about myself. And in that way, I'm not so unlike Adam and Eve. And I wonder if reading this passage at the start of the Lenten season, where we are called by the church to reflect on our lives and who we want to be in relation to others and to God, as well as how we want to live righteously in the world, if this story isn't an invitation to learn and to love ourselves and others more, what mistaken ideas do you have about yourselves? What mistaken ideas do you have about others? What mistaken ideas do you have about God? Where are you getting your information? We have 40 days to find out. It's not actually that much time. So we better get a move on.